employment to adventure on.
CHUM AM Toronto is TSN 1050 and iHeart Radio station. The Leafs live here. This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog Jeff O'Neill is not on today. That is Barry Gibb, a.k.a. Jonah Seeger from The Athletic, and Jamie Noodles McLennan. We're playing the Bee Gees all day. We love it. It's setting the tone. And Nick Nurse will join us here in just a moment. So Ray Ferraro is coming up in an hour. Ray will join us just after 6 o'clock. And Nick Nurse will join us here in a moment. And we'll
Megan trolling him?
Like, yeah, of course. I don't think it's a troll. I don't think there's anything trolling about being compared to Barry Gibb.
As a sex symbol, not as like a 76-year-old man.
Well, obviously not like modern-day Barry Gibb, but that's right. Prime Barry Gibb, and I think that's a good look, and it's flattering. I think it's a compliment.
All right.
You should take it that way anyway.
I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying. I mean, we can ask Megan. Megan can send us a note, and we'll see what she means by that. But I'm curious to get a read on how Nick is feeling today now that it's over, right? Is it a sense of relief? Is it bittersweet? Is it frustration?
Well, he coached the hell out of that team. I think he did a great job. It's just you could tell some nights he was frustrated because, you know, it wasn't going their way. They weren't getting the wins. You know, they didn't have the players that they were going to put out there, like, you know, all that type of stuff. But he's
a lot working against them for sure. And, I mean, to say nothing of the fact that they were never in Toronto at any point. Yeah. You know, in Tampa the whole year, scrambling to get down there to get set up. And you start 2-8, COVID ravaged the team. It was a weird year. It was a strange year. We felt very disconnected up here. Let's head down to Tampa. And here is the head coach of the Raptors, Nick Nurse. What type of feelings do you have today, Nick? Is it frustration? Is it bittersweet? Is it relief now that the season's over?
Well, I got all my frustrations out about 6 or 7 weeks ago. you know what? It's weird, you know, when any season ends, there's always such a slamming on of the brakes. So there is always a little bit of an emotionally, just weird feeling that all the practice travel just stops, right, so fast, even though you know it's coming this year a little bit. So I didn't feel great after the game last night, but just more a little bit sad and a little bit relieved at the same time, if that makes any sense at all. I think I was ready to put the, put the season in the books and kind of regroup it and recharge and things like that.
Well, I mentioned just prior to having you on that we felt very disconnected. I think I can speak for people up here in Toronto. I mean, you guys were out of sight, out of mind in a lot of ways. And it's not that we're not following and watching, but you're not at home. What about from your standpoint? Did you feel any connection at all to the city of Toronto throughout the year?
No, I mean, you know, same as you, really. I mean, we knew everybody was watching and that kind of stuff, but it's just not anywhere remotely the same. I just think of little things like, here recently in the last few games, there seemed to be a few more Raptors jerseys and groups of Raptors fans in the crowd. And, you know, geez, I was waving to them all like I knew them all. It was so nice to just see little clumps of Raptor fans, you know, for the first time in a long time, you know. So, you know, that's to your point of how disconnected it was and lack of juice, lack of energy, you know, lack of feel, you know, for the fans and you miss it. You know you're going to miss it, and you say, oh, we really miss it, but you do. It's a big, big part of the Raptors as a whole, the electricity that the city brings and the fans bring, for sure.
Nick, when I played in the NHL at the end of the season, there would be obviously your last game and then probably a day to let it settle in, and then there'd be exit meetings and meetings with trainers and coaches and managers and all of that type of stuff. What's the process with your group? Is it the same type of thing, or is it do you guys take a different approach to the off season?
Yeah, I mean, we just kind of started in on things actually yesterday and yesterday afternoon and evening and this morning, and with the exit interviews, we didn't think a little different when you know the season's kind of ending for sure. And you know, there's a bunch of guys that weren't playing in the game, so we could kind of get to them on game day and after the game, et cetera. Yeah, yeah, similar stuff. You just, you know, quick wrap up, quick next steps. But, you know, it's pretty good. I met with a bunch of my staff and a bunch of players today. So keep on going through that here till about Tuesday or Wednesday, and then that should wrap it up.
With Nick Nurse, and I'm sure a lot of it at some point here will be about the future and the offseason plans and building towards it. But there's got to be an element of looking back and trying to evaluate. And I have to believe it's incredibly difficult because of everything we've referenced, the fact that you guys are in a different city, different state, different country. COVID really hit your team hard. So in terms of the evaluation process, it's one thing to look at the standings. And it says what it says, and it says what it says about your team. But how do you kind of get through all this and try to see it through a clear lens in terms of what you actually have? Not necessarily how you all played, but what you actually have and how you can build upon it in the future.
Well, I think first of all, there's some good moments to reflect on. I even think here late in the year when we were playing about half our roster, we were playing pretty good and taking some really good teams. You know, we weren't taking many of them down, but about a minute to go, several times it was even. Didn't pull a lot of those out. So there was some good play. I think it is a little hard to evaluate exactly what we have. But I do think that, you know, our core guys still can, you know, look most teams in the eye and give them everything they want, and we're hard to beat. You know, the Kyles, the Freds, the OGs, the Pascals, and now we've kind of added, you know, Boucher. We found out a lot about him this year. It was nice to see Kim kind of come in and maybe be a guy that, you know, hopefully we can get into the fold. Still a tremendous upside with him, but fits in with those guys as well. We were able to give Malachi some extended minutes and look at him. You know, and I could go on. I don't need to go through everybody, but I think the core group still remains really strong. The core group needs to be extended or strengthened, and there needs to be a second unit that's ready to play and produce.
Nick, what do you think you'll remember most about the season and all the challenges it brought you?
You know what? I think that there was a ton of challenges. What I probably will remember most is it seemed like we got a little bit of a – once the COVID hit us, man, it was like, can we come out of this or not? It was really hard. Nobody felt physically very good, even though we were cleared. We just weren't kind of in – game shape or mid-season shape or whatever. So it was a little harder than any of us expected. But I think once that kind of the dust kind of settled on all that, and I, like I said, the frustration of that kind of, we just kind of had to let it go at some point. We really had a productive couple months of practices, film study. Thought the team, whoever was out there, I thought played really connected. We got back to guarding the way we want to for good portions of the game. You know, so, you know, it just felt like we kind of back to who we were a little bit after kind of the last, the last hurdle of many where it was cleared, you know?
Well, take us back to that portion of the season when COVID hit the team the way it did, yourself included, and you were not available on the sidelines.
Yep.
What was your role in terms of game planning, in terms of just communicating? Did you completely step away, or were you still involved in some capacity?
No, for sure. I was still talking to those guys, but we were talking game plans. We were talking starting lineups. We were talking, you know, whatever. It wasn't, again, we were down to about eight players, so it wasn't that hard to, you know, you got to play them all, right? Right. You got to figure out who's going on the night and give them more minutes. And the next night it might be some other guys. But, you know, I also believe, you know, Sergio is an accomplished coach. I don't need to sit here and tell him every little move to make. And I want him to, you know, have some freedom to coach the team, et cetera. So I tried not to be overbearing in the middle of everything, but we certainly had pregame and game plan discussions and all those kind of things.
What was it like to sit there and watch the game?
Well, it's about like you'd think. There was a night where we, you know, played awful against somebody, and that wasn't much fun. And then the next night we go on the road on a back-to-back doubleheader and played great in Boston or whatever, and that was pretty fun. You know, kind of my emotions were kind of, I felt like a fan, that's for sure. My emotions were tied directly to how the team was playing.
We're used to that. Welcome to our world. That's what we do on a daily basis. With
thanks
Nick Nurse.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we're happy to have you. It was obviously a different stretch run than Raptor fans have been used to, than you've been used to. Even when you were an assistant on the staff, you guys were always going to the playoffs. And obviously your first year, you won a title. Last year, you guys were on pace for 59-60 wins. And at some point it became clear this wasn't going to be your year. And I think Kyle Lowry and his usage kind of represented all of this. Can you take us through the reasoning behind this and how it got to a point where Kyle just wasn't playing anymore the final 7-8 games of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was two things. You know, once we got out, knocked out, and it was pretty clear that we weren't going to, you know, regroup and be able to make a strong enough push. We just didn't really see the point in running him further, you know, into the ground, so to speak, this late in the year. But more importantly, we wanted to, you know, free things up for these other guys to play, these young guys that, you know, we didn't really get a proper G League season. We didn't get last summer development in. And this was, is really critical that we had this time to give, you know, a couple of our guys, younger guys, all the minutes they could handle and see what they could do. And I think we learned a lot about them. I think it made total sense.
So how receptive was Kyle? Because clearly he had to be on board with that. I would assume if he said he wants to play, he's playing.
Yeah, he was, you know how it is. He kind of gets to a point where he wanted to play, and there was some games where we went out on that West Coast trip and played. Obviously, he played really well. You know, we just didn't. Other than the Lakers game was the only one we kind of could pick off. But I think he was good with it too. It wasn't like I was having to oversell him that we needed to watch these guys, but he was kind of on board. He's always been pretty good with that stuff.
Nick, you've obviously had key free agents past couple years. How do you usually handle situations like that? Like, how often will you choose to speak to Kyle in the next few months? Does anything in the past kind of inform how you'll handle the next little bit here?
Well, I think that, you know, Kyle and I, you know, we speak pretty frequently in general. I don't think anything changes there. I think he's pretty clear on how I feel about him and his importance to the team. Maybe, you know, I probably have spoken to him more than maybe some of the other guys in the past, you know. I don't know. I don't really see being much difference with Kyle.
How much game do you think he still has left?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like, I mean, obviously the last game we saw him play, that's as well as we've seen him play in a long time, that game in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to be an emotional, strange offseason. And obviously you're directly involved, because I think we can apply the same logic and same question to Masai. You know, like, do you get in? Obviously you're talking to Masai, but what kind of role do you think you'll play in the next month and a half?
I mean, listen, I think, you know, like first of all, I think we're a really good team, Masai and I think, you know, I feel like super comfortable being able to say, have really honest conversations with him. And he does too. And I think we're, I like his mindset. He thinks championship level. And so do I. Like, I don't really see the point of doing this unless you're trying to win a championship. I really don't. I mean, no matter who we end up with, I'm still trying to sit there and figure out, well, there's got to be some way we can do it. You know what I mean? So, and I love that about him. I like, again, our relationship's really good. I don't really have many uncomfortable moments with him, if any. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I would hope he's going to be back for sure. He's really good at what he does, and he's enjoyable to work for, and I love his mentality. So there you go.
Yep. Well, I think obviously you know where everyone stands up here in Toronto, and it's going to be a pretty wild off season, and I think there's going to be a lot of curiosity in terms of how certain players, core players that we know will return, can utilize a year like this and grow upon it. And I think Pascal Siakam comes into focus primarily when we have that conversation. I mean, this feels like an eternity ago, but what was it, game four, game five, you sat him out, right? And there appeared to be some issues. Again, we're sitting here from afar, but we're wondering what's going on with Siakam, and he's had ups and downs in terms of his play on the court. How can he learn from this? How can he grow from this? And what are the expectations with Pascal moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's in a really good place right now. I think you're right. I mean, I think I've never, I say this to Masai and Bobby too. I said, listen, I gotta have a standard here of how I'm going to coach. You don't want me to be different, right? And if a guy leaves the bench, then he's got to, we had to do what we had to do there. And the other thing is I'm going to continually ask not only Pascal, I'm going to ask all these guys to play harder, right? I'm going to ask them to play harder and continually do that. And I said, you don't want me to be different than that. And I'm not going to be. I'm expecting, for us to be who we are, we play both ends and we really guard, and you can't have a championship level team without defense. And defense takes a lot of effort and energy, and that's what I'm going to expect out of all those guys, two-way players, and doing it every time we step on the floor.
Well, it had been working for you guys, obviously, in a really positive manner. And this year was a strange year. It was a tough year in the end in terms of the standings. But we certainly hope you get home. I think I can speak for you and the whole organization, and certainly everyone up here in Toronto, looking forward to having you guys back. And, congrats on getting through it all. It sure seemed like a challenge at times. And, good luck with the offseason, Nick.
Hey, thanks. When we get back, tell me it's not going to be amazing, though. As hungry as much as everybody's missed being in that arena, and it's always wild, but it's going to be wilder than it's ever been.
I think you're right about that.
I agree.
Yeah, we packed that barn up the first time. It's going to be a pretty cool scene, and hopefully sooner rather than later. So enjoy the off season, and we'll do this again down the road. Thank you, Nick.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
You got
Take
it.
Care up there.
There's Nick Bye-bye. Nurse. Head coach of the Raptors, who's always an interesting guy, fun guy to talk to. He's always been good to us over the years, and I think he's got a pretty appropriate attitude about things. I mean, it was a tough year. I mean, there's no dancing around it, and
he was realistic too.
Very
like
realistic.
You just said, the only thing, I'm not going to cherry pick anything. Him saying, "I hope Masai's back." Like I was kind of waiting for him, but like, yeah, you know what, formality, like it left the door pretty open.
But the door is open, right?
I understand.
He would
that.
Probably get in more trouble if he said the opposite, wouldn't he?
Right. If he gave the Nazem Kadri about Joffrey Lupul. Like, no. Yeah, guy's back is great. We're all great. You know what I mean. But, I was waiting for him to say something about Masai. Looking forward to continuing on winning and trying to win another championship with him. He was like, I hope he's back, which is, I get it. He's a free agent. He's got to work on his contract. But this will be the time, right? He's going to start probably within the next week negotiating.
Absolutely. I don't know if they're coming back up here. I don't get the impression like they are. I think they're going to stay in Tampa throughout the draft process and the lottery. Right. And, it's going to be a different year than it was last year in terms of being able to scout draft picks because they're going to set it up, I believe, locally. I think they're in Chicago, and they're just going to bring everyone through almost like a combine. But listen, everyone knows that Nick Nurse would be pushing for Masai to stick around. I mean, Masai gave him the opportunity of a lifetime. It really took a gamble on Nick Nurse. Like, he moved on from the coach of the year in Dwayne Casey and handed the keys to Nick Nurse, and Nick Nurse has done a spectacular job with it. But I found it interesting what he had to say also about Lowry, how, you know, the message was sent to Kyle. Kyle was receptive of it because I do believe, regardless of what they'd say, if Kyle said, "I really want to play the last game yesterday," he would have played, right? Yeah. Like, Malachi Flynn didn't have to play last time. They played six guys. Kyle could have been the seventh guy to play. Clearly, Lowry was fine with not playing, and it probably got to a point where he said, if this is the plan, then don't ask me again. I'm not playing anymore. That's fine. Exactly. We'll move on and let's go. But he, you know, when asked how much more game do you think he's got, he's a lot. Like, I would think Nick Nurse would be pushing hard to bring back Lowry because he wants to get this thing back on the rails, clearly.
I agree.
Could tell that throughout the whole conversation. This was not a fun year in terms of losing games and trying to explain what happened and why it happened. They want to get home, pack the barn up, and reassemble and get cooking again. And there's things that have to happen on top of just bringing back a guy like Lowry if you decide to do that, as he said earlier in the interview. Like, they've got to find some depth. They've got to find a second unit. They've got to find some bigs. You know, there's a couple things here that you got to check off.
Yeah, there's work to be done.
Work to be done, for sure.
But you know, you got to get, you know, Masai's got to make his decision, and then they got to have a good offseason. And they've got, you know, money. They got money to play with. They got cap room, all of that type of stuff. So you've got to build a team around this young core.
Absolutely. And, like, next year, everything is going to be – you're going to be back to square one. They're playing 82 games again. You're going to have appropriate schedules and time off, and the All-Star break will be back. And just looking at this roster, like, they played 72 games as a team. No one started more games than 56, and that was Pascal Siakam. So Siakam led the team in games started, and he missed 16 starts. Like, that is how much turnover there was in terms of injuries, in terms of COVID, you know, in terms of rest. You know, it's a very difficult process to try to evaluate what you have.
But they've got to figure out, like you heard Nick Nurse talk about it, championship is how they think. How do you get what they have on a road to a championship? And that's what I don't know, because I think it's they have some really interesting pieces, but then you bring up Kyle and the Lowry question, like, what do you do? Like, if you bring Lowry back, are you a championship contender? No. Okay, so then how do you get to that point? And I think it's a really interesting question.
I think it is. I think you can be with Lowry plus more,
but like, who is more?
Well, that's the question. I mean, that's where the draft lottery is going to come into play. Free agency is going to come into play. Maybe a tough decision in terms of trades, in terms of letting guys walk. You know, like, that's not Nick's role, is to, you know, ask him about what they're going to do with Gary Trent Jr. He's not going to answer that. He's the head coach. He's not the GM. He's not the president. But do they bring him back, or do they let him walk and free that money up? Do they let Lowry walk because of where else they want to allocate the money? You know, like, that is where business comes into play. You look at it from an emotional standpoint and say, wow, we want Kyle back because of who he is, and I'd love to see him play in front of a home crowd one more time, and I think he's still got some game left. But maybe you could put that $15, $20, $25 million towards something else that would actually help you take a step further into the right direction. So these are all moving parts. It's going to start with Masai. I mean, you got to figure out who's the architect here.
Right.
Is it him? Is it him and Webster? Is it Webster on his own? I have to believe that's the highest priority and has to be clarified within the next month, right?
I agree.
The next month, month and a half, you've got to get that figured out. Are you staying or are you not?
Well, I think I got to be honest. I think it's got to be sooner than that, because if he's not staying, like if he says I'm staying, we just have to find a number and we got to find out a situation. Fine, let it stretch out for a month because he'll be part of the day to day. If he's leaving, you got to get this stuff sorted out sooner than later, because you've got to hire somebody else or have a search to hire somebody else. Like, there's got to be an inkling, and I guarantee you, Larry Tannenbaum knows one way or the other where Masai is leaning. And
that'd be the ultimate scoop. Like, what is the drop dead date on Masai? Because there's a mutual respect there, right? Like, Ujiri's, he knows what's coming here. Masai, and Masai owes them a debt of gratitude as well. I mean, we all, both parties have been very beneficial for one another, right? Like, MLSC has put him in a position to succeed, paid him a lot of money, and they're courting him still. They're going after him. They're not going to disrespect him in terms of the deal, and vice versa. Masai has done a lot for them, blah, blah, blah. So at some point, there's got to be a drop dead date. Is it in 2 weeks? Is it in a month? But it has to happen.
Can you do that, though, with like a person that important to everything you built?
I think you have to in terms of making the decision, are we doing this or not? You know, like you see this all the time in sports where, you know, the Shapiro deal is the best example. It's done, but we're working it out. Okay, what does that mean? I'm staying. Like, we've agreed that we're staying, and we're just going to make sure that we iron out the details here. That's what I think might end up happening. I'm not saying it's a done deal, signed deal. But are you staying or are you not?
Yeah, that just the decision, yes or no. Then you can work out the semantics. Because if it's a no, then you got to move on. Like,
but
you've got to find.
I think you're right, Jamie. Like, it has to be really soon. Like,
yeah, like
we're in
like,
the May. We're in the middle of the of May.
And here's
the other
thing.
You kind of need to know, like, right now. If you're, but are they? I guess the question is: are they hiring someone else if he's not coming back?
I don't think they will immediately. I think Bobby Webster will just be handed the keys, and it's on him to figure it out.
You're right, but I mean, Masai just doesn't wake up today and go, okay, now I should put some thought of my future.
Of course.
He's been sitting there for 3 or 4 months, probably going, what am I doing? Do I want to expand? You know, do I want to head in a different direction? Do I want, like, he seems like a pretty worldly person and who has lots of interests inside and outside of basketball. So there might be other opportunities for him out there. And he has to now take a look at those. But he just doesn't wake up today and go, okay, I'm going to take 1 week to sort this out. That's my point is, if he's gone, you got to figure that out sooner than later. You
Absolutely.
Can't let this drag out and go, oh, a month from now, oh, he's made a decision.
They
and now,
can't and they won't. That's not. Right. It's just, it's not possible. It's not going to happen. They both mutually respect each other. It can't happen. Both parties have to know that. And a deal of this magnitude doesn't fall apart because of some fine print.
Right.
You know, it's not like, I think I'll stay. Oh, you won't give me the plane 5 times a year? Actually, I'm leaving. You know, that's not the way this is going to work out. You got to determine, are you staying or not? And then beyond that, how much money, how many perks, how long, what else you want, what else you need? You know, but those are all details that both parties can figure out. And I don't think there's really, I don't think there's going to be too many no's from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment in terms of what he might be seeking if he decides to stay. So I wouldn't be shocked if this is resolved in terms of the core question, are you staying or not, within the next month, for sure.
Yeah.
Within the next month. Yeah. I think it almost has to. Leafs-Habs on Thursday night. We'll get into that. Back into the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Jays are off tonight. Took 2 of 3 against Philly over the weekend. They are in action coming up against the American League East. 10 straight games. Boston, Tampa, New York. We'll start looking ahead to that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. Yeah, we're moving on. That's enough. BGs, we played it a lot this afternoon. Maybe we'll bring it back for the final segment. But,
there's no more BG songs to play? Is that,
I think,
all, like, Bells is like, we're out or what?
Yeah, I think we're out of the catalog. So we'll bring one more back, Saturday Night Fever or whatever, for the final segment. But thanks again to Nick Nurse for joining us. Just got word that Sheldon Keefe will be on the show tomorrow. So from one coach to the next, we'll have Sheldon Keefe on tomorrow. And they were practicing today. The Leafs will be the last team to get going, right? The Leafs Habs, because the Oilers and Jets start on Wednesday night. Every other series south of the border will have begun by then. And Leafs Habs go Thursday night. Some pretty good news that Zach Bogosian has been medically cleared. Does not mean he will be in the lineup come game one, but I don't see why he wouldn't. Like, Sheldon Keefe on one hand said he's not quite there, but then Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, reported he's been medically cleared. So if you're good enough to skate today, take contact today on Monday, why would you not play on Thursday night?
How long has he been out, though? Like, from a...
He's been out a while.
I was going to say, is he not...
A month.
Over a month. Like,
But what's the difference? Like, so practice Wednesday, and let's say he played Thursday. The difference would be he practiced Friday and played Saturday? Like, what...
Exactly. Riley Nash hasn't played a game.
Yeah.
Riley Nash is playing Monday, Thursday night, I would assume.
But my point is, Riley Nash, I don't know this, but is he's probably had a couple weeks of practice where he's been able to do battle drills and stuff like that. Like, here's my only thing. I know you want your best in game one, but you also want you to have access to your best in game two and game three. Like I would not have a problem if you feel comfortable enough letting him sit to game one and playing him on the weekend. That's maybe a couple extra days of getting comfortable, maybe absorbing and giving hits and that in practice, battle drills. Like, I understand. And Zach Bogosian is a wily vet. He could probably, you know, play and not even miss a beat. But I'm just talking from a standpoint of timing and everything. Like, if you feel like he may need a day or two, because it's you're looking at the big picture and not just in a vacuum of like, okay, Thursday's roster is set in stone and that. Like, this is going to be fluent. That would be my only thing, is I wouldn't rush a guy like that if you felt comfortable going with Sandin and, let's say, Dermott, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's likely going to be the third pairing. And that might be the reasoning, is like, we want him to take more contact, take more shots. I mean, you're dealing with a shoulder injury, so there could be an element of building him up. And it's not the end of the world,
right?
But it's if you've been medically cleared, he's been around the block, he's going to be reinserted into the lineup when he's ready to play. Bogosian's playing, and I think Sandin will stay in. I wouldn't be shocked if Dermott got a taste at some point, though. But the lineup has been, you know, there's some intrigue here. Like, the fact that Riley Nash has been inserted on the third line, when he was acquired, it didn't get a lot of play because Nick Foligno had been acquired the day before.
Right.
And it was more about the Foligno show, and there were other things going around the league, and I understand that. But I remember thinking at that point, like, this wasn't just about a cap scene. Like, they're playing him. They like him. They want him. And I figured, though, he'd be on the fourth line. I when we did our mock-up lineups a couple of weeks ago, I had Thornton, Nash, Spezza on the fourth line. I did not have Nash on the third line. What sticks out to me, it doesn't matter now because there's no salary cap, but it says something about how they feel about Alex Kerfoot. The fact that when the going gets tough and it's go time here, it's like, you're on the wing now. So that's how they see him, as getting the most out of him. And I'm not sure what that says about his future. You can't be paying a guy $3.5 million to play on the wing on the third line when you got $40 million tied up in four guys on the first two lines.
Well, it seemed like they made that decision, Hayes, like, early in the season, where they went in. Remember, they went in saying, we want to have this third line. It was Mikheyev, it was Kerfoot, it was Hyman. And they said, we really want to have this line, Keith did, that we can use, like, in the defensive zone. We want to have this defensive kind of grind line. And then it didn't work. Like, Hyman had to get moved around, and it became clear that Kerfoot couldn't be your anchor of that kind of line. And he was useful in other different ways, and he played some center. But it was really clear early in the year that was something Sheldon Keefe wanted, and Pierre Engvall was not going to be that guy, and Adam Brooks isn't going to be that guy. And they faced Riley Nash. Like, they saw him last year, and they saw how Tortorella used him and, like, buried him in the defensive zone. He can kill penalties. He can, you know, they can use him to win draws on the penalty kill. He just has more versatility than what they had. So
to me, it makes sense.
And he's a bigger body.
And he's very effective defensively.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I agree. Like, Riley Nash, basically, they said, like, that's the upgrade in that position. You're right, Hayes. It flew under the radar, and to the point where
we had
a big story at the Athletic.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah? You had a big story?
Oh, yeah, deep. We went hard on that.
I missed that one. I missed that one. But what I'm saying is, I didn't have him on my playoff roster, but I missed him. Like, I forgot about him. That's how under the radar. That's on me. But I, like, it clearly makes sense. Like, I think Engvall is a filler. I did have Galchenyuk in my lineup, but I can see how they feel that their depth. Like, with Hyman up, there's no room for him. If you're going to play Hyman in the top six with Matthews and Marner and Foligno in that second line, then I don't see why Galchenyuk would be in your lineup.
No, I don't think he will be unless one of those guys comes out, because clearly what Sheldon Keefe is doing here, and why they went out and got Foligno, and there's been some debate recently because of the way Hall played, and even at the trade deadline, is it more Hall or is it more Foligno? Yes, it is, but I think I know the reasoning. Whether you agree with it or not, is they saw Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, and they saw Hyman work with both. And they said, we need to find a Hyman-esque player. And that's why they went out and got Foligno. Taylor Hall is not that guy. It doesn't mean Hall isn't effective. He's been very effective in Boston. But yeah, that is why they chose Foligno. And clearly what Keefe is trying to do here from a philosophy standpoint and a building your lineup standpoint is it's actually a throwback to the Burke days. It's top six, bottom six, where like the top six is going to play a ton and the offense is going to be driven. They're going to try to get matchups. They're going to start in the offensive zone. The third line is basically a shutdown line and a line where they're going to be starting in their own zone a ton. And then the fourth line is like the character and tangible veteran and inspiration line, right? Of Thornton,
that's
Spezza,
a good name for it, Hayes.
And Simmons. Inspiration line.
I like it.
That's it. Take it. Copyright. You can pay me for it. Or hook me up with a free subscription. One of the two. I've been paying for so long. But the that's what it is.
It's like almost like two fourth lines, really, or two third lines, whatever you want to look at it.
Yes, it effectively is. And that's why it is top six, bottom six. Like, in the top two lines are built similarly. You know, in terms of you got Hyman and Foligno who play a role, you got Matthews, Tavares, you got Marner and Nylander. You know, like, that's how they've defined the lines. And I don't know if it'll stick. I expect that it probably won't based on injuries, based on play, how the series all play out. But I can see that's where Keefe is going. And that's what he's done here. And I like it. I like the way it looks, 1 through 12. We'll find out come tomorrow night or come Thursday night.
That's the thing. I mean, both of those, in watching the games yesterday, the one thing that stood out for me was pace.
Oh, my God. Like, the Florida-Tampa game was, like, Florida, insane.
That was the fastest game I've seen. I mean, Colorado and Vegas play that way. Like, they have a ton of pace. That's the one thing that stood out for me. The physicality, obviously, like that Florida. I don't know if we should use that as a barometer, because that series might just be an outlier, because those two teams, the way they're constructed, the way that there's some vitriol already, I don't think you can go, okay, you got to play like that to have success. I think the intensity will be like that. It just, you have to apply it within the makeup of your own team, if that makes sense. Like, there, obviously, Habs, Leafs will be intense. I just don't see both of those teams, like, flying like those two teams that I saw last night. Like, the Leafs are a fast team. They're not the fastest team, especially in the bottom six.
Yeah, no, you look at it, like, even, like, Tavares doesn't fly around.
No, he's
a
good skater. He's not elite. You know what I mean? Like, there's... Yeah. You know, Hyman's a good skater. I think Foligno skates better than people think, but he's an average skater. Like, he's not elite skater. Like, and then you look at the
inspiration.
The inspirational line. Yeah, like, there's some, you know, that's more grizzled.
That's not a fast line at all.
It's not. No. But ultimately, the point that I was trying to make was, you don't have to go, oh, you got to play like Tampa or play like Florida. Like, they're going to play like themselves.
Right.
And up the intensity. Like, that's how they have to play. So it'll be interesting to see how their games are established within that series. Winnipeg, Edmonton's going to look different. You know, the Islanders, Pittsburgh, like, I thought it was actually a really good game. I don't know how much you guys got to see. Like, the Islanders play, you know, kind of a boring style or whatever. All I could think of was Matt Martin seemed to not come off the ice. I don't know if you noticed that. I was going to check his ice time. Like, that line played a ton and played quite well.
They always have. They always do. I mean, that's the way the Islanders roll. Trotz rolls. Like, he rolls through his lineup. It was a good game. Tristan Jarry, I did not think he played well.
No, I didn't think he played well.
Terrible. But here's my number one beef of the weekend in terms of – and I can't figure it out. Because watching, you know, SportsCenter and watching TSN Hockey and other networks, Marc-Andre Fleury deserved accolades, a lot of accolades. Like, he had some stops that were truly incredible yesterday. Unbelievable acrobatic stops.
But
Cam Talbot didn't get a word from anybody.
42
save shutout. And people after the game are like, Cam, what do you think of Marc-Andre Fleury? Wasn't that incredible? Like, what does this guy have to do to get some attention? He won the game. Yeah. He actually won the game. Fleury played exceptionally well. Talbot was technically better because he
made more stops, and he never let anything in. Like, yeah. Why isn't anyone talking about Cam Talbot? I didn't see one highlight on Cam Talbot.
That's really funny. You're bang on. You're right. Like, how many times have we seen that, though, where somebody gets asked about somebody else? Jonas, you're probably guilty of that, too.
I try not to that much. I know it's annoying.
Like, I can understand. Like, I pointed to this last week, I think. Like, Draisaitl was interviewed in between periods. He had two goals in the game, and they're like, where do you think of McDavid getting 100? Like, okay, I understand that. Same thing. Matthews getting 40, well, no matter who's getting. Like, I get that because those are individual. These are really great feats. But you're right. Like, Cam Talbot's having a night, and they're like, what do you think about Fleury's glove?
I didn't hear anything about him. Like, Fleury, again, it's because of the stature of Fleury, and Vegas gets more pub than Minnesota. But, man, Talbot was pretty good, I would suggest. He probably deserves a little bit of love, a couple of flowers.
Also, I don't know how you make of this, but if you look at Minnesota's record against Vegas, it has to be a bit concerning.
Has to be.
I think Vegas' schedule has been kind of nuts too.
Right, but I still have Vegas winning the series. But what do I know? My point being is that I'm looking at it. Colorado wins that last game of the series, last game of the regular season, and win the President's Trophy. They might have been better off booting it because Colorado versus Minnesota, and let Vegas play St. Louis. Like, Colorado is going to have their hands full against St. Louis. Like, St. Louis isn't going, like, they're I know they finished way down there in the standings. They're battle tested. They didn't care how they made the playoffs as long as they made it.
Once they got in, yeah, they're in, and they'll recalibrate, and they've got potential for sure. Although Minnie's, they're good, and they're peaking at the right time too, right? Like, that's not going to be a fun series if you're Vegas.
And that kid can play. That Kaprizov is a player.
Oh, he's a really good player. That's your rookie of the year for sure.
5'9". I didn't realize he was that small, but he's got balls on him,
too. He battles, like, man. He's in the muck all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's a good player.
Good game.
We got three more tonight. We got game two, Boston-Washington, which was a great game on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And Ovi, man, did he look good on Saturday night. It felt like he threw 25 hits alone, and he was right in there. And Boston, listen, they got to get back off the mat now. You know, like that one feels like seven. That feels like a series that's going seven. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Boston won tonight. But we'll tee those up. Ray Ferraro coming up in about 15 minutes. Al's Brothers Power Rankings at 6:30. I don't know if you've been a part of this before, Jonas, but
I know Noodles loves them.
Yeah, this will blow your mind.
Early on, I had some problems. Now I've really warmed up to them.
Right.
He's been great.
He's been outstanding. And we got to get an update on how he's feeling after the 200-meter race on Friday. Yeah. See how the body held up over the weekend. So Al's Brother coming up in about 45 minutes as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up. Al's Brother and his power rankings in the next hour as well. The Jays are off tonight. See Marcus Semien coming out and talking about the vibe down in Dunedin. Sounded very similar to what Van Vliet had to say about playing in Tampa. And I don't know if they're paying lip service to get back to Toronto. Like, Semien's never played in Toronto as a Blue Jay, so I don't think it's as much about that. But he said the park, basically it sucks that you're playing in a park like that for real.
It's a minor league park. I mean,
Well, aren't they going to Buffalo pretty soon?
They are, so I don't think it's going to be much better for
him. So another minor league park?
Yeah, it's not ideal. But, man, has he been good recently. They moved him back into the leadoff role, and his numbers are off the charts. And the Jays are red hot. Like, Vladdy going deep again over the weekend. And the starters are giving them strikeouts, like giving them wins, decent innings. And the bullpen's holding up. Like, that was an impressive weekend for the Blue Jays. And they go back-to-back Saturday, Sunday. They're off tonight. And then you got Boston coming up, Tampa, the Yankees. And the American League East feels like it's back to, like, a level of dominance that we're accustomed to and we're used to.
Right.
But this is not going to be an easy run for the Jays. Like, they got to keep chugging. They look really good. They're red hot right now. But you cannot let your foot off the gas because teams are going to blow past you.
I agree. Like, you know. The bats are alive. Like, the one thing coming into the season wasn't it. It was the pitching, right? We're concerned about the pitching. It's been holding up.
Yep, it has. Yep. No, it's been working, man. Like, I gotta give credit to Pete Walker, the pitching coach, and Montoya. I think they've utilized their bullpen well. They're finding guys, you know, and that's on the organization. That's on the hierarchy where you've got guys showing up. Like, Chatwood has been unbelievable, and Obviously, Romano is, you know, he's back and he's healthy and he looks good. But there's still some big arms that they had high expectations for that are not even available.
Right. Nate Pearson.
Pearson being a big one. Kirby Yates was the guy they signed, you know, more than anyone who they thought would be basically their closer or high leverage arm, and he's never been available to them. And the bullpen has been spectacular. So, you know, there's still some fundamentals that need to come together. The rotation is still not perfect.
Right.
But they're in a good spot. And this is all without Springer. And I don't get the impression like he's that close. Like, listening to Ross Atkins talk about it, it's very difficult to get a read on anything Ross is going to say, because he's always going to claim optimism and, hey, we're in a good spot. That's how he operates. But it's impossible to really get a timeline on that.
Right.
So I don't know when we're going to see Springer back.
Well, they got to let him get as much time as possible to get healthy, so that they don't run into, like, this guy being injured all season, in and out of the lineup and stuff.
Absolutely. And you're winning without him, so it's all good, right?
Yeah.
Like, if they were losing, they had a losing record, it'd be even more pressure on him. It'd be a bigger story, quite frankly. And probably if they were at home, it would be a bigger story.
Yeah.
But like the Raptors, they're kind of out of sight, out of mind. But more into that in the Jays, the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Raptors wrapping up their season into the final hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.